Are beginning Igaros HaKodesh, which can be found on page 389-390. This is the fourth section of the Tanya, which technically speaking is not part of the Tanya. As we mentioned last week, that the first editions of the Tanya that were printed during the lifetime of the Alter Rebbe did not include this section nor the section which comes after this, known as Kuntres Achrayim. But the sons of the Alter Rebbe decided, with the Mittler Rebbe at that time was Rebbe, so decided that it would be proper to include these 32 letters. There are probably many, many more letters that the Alter Rebbe sent to various individuals and communities, but people didn't archive them, I guess. And these are the ones that we have over here. There is existant. I believe that it initially came out, there was one volume that had letters from the Alter Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, and Tzemach Tzedek in one volume known as Igros Kodesh. And then later on, they came out with a small volume of letters from just the Alter Rebbe. But they were not in those the Rebbe never sought to incorporate in the Tanya, because the Tanya is the Tanya. The Friedrich Rebbe, when he set up Chitas, set it up such to include Igaros HaKodesh and Kuntres Achrayim in the daily study, so that in the course of the year we go through these letters also. So for a casual glance, we therefore conclude that part of the Tanya is therefore Igaros HaKodesh, and therefore we are learning it. A little bit of a grammar thing. The grammar here at this point, and in this instance, is chosen by one of the three sons of the Alter Rebbe in what it's called. It should really, technically speaking, be called Igros HaKodesh, or Igros Kodesh, which would mean holy letters. Igaret HaKodesh is singular. It's more than one letter here, though. And we say, the Rebbe pointed out, that it could very well be that since the previous section was called Igaros HaTeshuvah, that really, technically speaking, is one continuum, even though it's 12 chapters. But we mentioned at the onset, when we learned chapter 1 of Igaros HaTeshuvah, that it's called an Igaros because a person should read it the same way like they read a letter, and it should be like a personal correspondence that they're receiving. So therefore, it's called Igaros instead of, say, Shar HaTshuva, which our book's called Shari Tshuva, for example. And so following that vein, the Alter Rebbe's sons decided to call this section Igaros HaKodesh singular, and just to keep it in the same line, even though there are 32 different letters. It was pointed out that the purpose of including these letters in the Tanya is the whole purpose of the Tanya is Ki Karav Elecha Hadavar Ma'od Beficha Ublevav Chalasoisoi, that it's very close in your heart to serve, it's very close in your heart and your mouth and your heart to do it. And so therefore these are practical letters per se that engage in a person in and encourage a person to engage in Torah, davening, and Gemilas Chasadim, especially the Gemilas Chasadim from letter 3 until like letter 15. With the exception of letter 11, the letters all deal with giving tzedakah. This letter here primarily deals with learning Torah. So now there is no chronology in the letters. This letter is not the first one written of all the 32, and the next one is next, because this letter was written 10 years before the second letter. And letter 29 came before this one. So I did not see, per se, any of the commentaries that discuss the order of why the letters were put in the order that they were put. But I do know that there is a sicha someplace, which hopefully by the time we get to there, I will find it, that the Rebbe discusses Igros 32 as being the lave of the Geras HaKadosh, and it's no mere chance, but it's Hashgacha Pratis that it happens to be the Lamed Beis, the lave, the heart of the Geras HaKadosh, just like Perek Lamed Beis is the heart of the heart of Tanya. So, and there is a sicha also where the Rebbe said that chapter 32 of the book of Devarim is the heart of Mishneh Torah, the book of Devarim. So the Rebbe was into it. Okay, so here now, this letter doesn't have, it's not that this Rebbe letter is based on any major occurrence that happened till now, even though it sounds like it does. Paiskim debracha, it says, we'll begin with a blessing. Levarach alahaydis laHashem kitayv, to bless and to praise Hashem because He is good. So the idea being here, what's the idea of a bracha? The idea of a bracha is to draw down Elokus into the world. Yeah. Whereas davening is an arousal from below. When a person stands and davens to Hashem, this is an expression of self trying to elevate to Hashem. When a person is saying a bracha, that's drawing down, it's hamshacha, that's drawing down godliness from the source of bracha. So like the purpose of a bracha is to sort of like fill in the gaps. So he says, now that's what it means, paislin bebracha levarech, to bless. That the idea of blessing is to, like I just said, to fill in the gaps. Ula haydis lashem, hodu, haydah has two meanings. One is an expression of maidia, of admitting, of, is it over here too? No, he's not here. Admission, like we say, "Maidi Manachnu Lach," we admit to you, etc., etc. We say davening every day, and then also it has an expression of thanking. So here he's thanking Hashem, Ki Tayv, and it says Ein Tayv. He himself is going to say, the other is going to say Ein Tayv El Teira right now, that he is thanking Hashem for the dissemination and the promulgation of Torah study. In other words, the Alter Rebbe at this point is sending out a general letter to the community, which says that how great it is the fact that people are learning Torah. Now this letter really very much focuses on learning Torah, but at the end he gives a big plug for davening. And it kind of associates that you really can't learn unless you daven. We'll talk about that when we get to it. So when he says here that he's thanking people for the Torah that people are doing. It says, Shmua tova shoma v'tirchia nafshi. I heard a good news, and this good news made my soul feel alive. It says there's a relationship between a chassid and a rebbe. And one of the greatest things that a chassid could experience is if the rebbe would say thank you to them. That would be a tremendous thing, because the person is doing something for the Rebbe. And here it is the Rebbe gives, Alter Rebbe gives an example back in Tanya that when a person, the relationship that a person has with Hashem is similar to a slave and a king. And if you have a pashut slave, a simple slave, that he doesn't think the king knows who he is and doesn't have any... doesn't know of his existence, doesn't know his name, doesn't know of anything, and the king specifically calls for him and says, could you please do this for me? So then the slave is on the top of the world. So there, the Rebbe uses the example of slave and king. but it's because it would behoove him, I gather, if he were to use the example of Rebbe and Chassid. It'd be a bit of an imposition, I guess. But it's definitely the same thing, the example of Rebbe and Chassid. And it's not that it says the very often, especially in the last years of the last 20 years of the Rebbe's life, we know that right now there's in existence 30-something volumes of letters from the Rebbe, and as the volumes progress, the letters get shorter because the Rebbe's volume of mail increased to the point that I think right now the last volume of letters that they're up to is the early 60s or maybe mid-60s. But when I was learning in 770 in the early 80s, I saw every single day the mailman come with two gunny sacks filled with mail for the Rebbe. And that would be the first thing that Binyamin Klein, who should live long and healthy years, would do. Is he would open the mail and he would take out the letters. He put the checks in one pile and he put the letters in another pile. And it would take him quite a while to go through all this. The Rebbe looked at all of them. And it was a big thing that the Rebbe didn't. They'd ask Leibel Groner, don't you answer the Rebbe's mail? And he would respond, chas v'sholom, that he never answered the Rebbe's mail. The Rebbe always looked at his mail. And sometimes what a person would get, the answer that I got very many times, was simply, tach v'tach asker alitzian, which means, thank you very much, and I'll mention it at the Rebbe's grave. Just even that is enough that it says that there were people that when they would get such an answer, wouldn't say Tachna that day. Because they had gotten an answer from the Rebbe.
But to say on a yard site. Okay.
No, yeah, of course. A yard site is an Eserot sign. When the Rebbe's neshama has a greater ability to help them in their supplication before Hashem. And like this, it says that a person gets a letter. This is actually quite common. This goes all the way back to the Baal Shem Tov, and maybe even before the Baal Shem Tov, that a person would, there were people that when they would get letters, because letters traveling in Europe 200 years ago was already a big thing over there because of how the mail moved, but people would make a sudas haidah when they would get a letter from the Rebbe. They would make a party.
Before the Baal Shem Tov.
Around, I know going back to the Baal Shem Tov for sure. Okay? So there are people that wouldn't say Tachnan and would get an answer. Tach v'tach asker alitzion. Thank you very much. I'll mention it by my father's grave. Because the Rebbe is saying thank you. The Rebbe has appreciated for what this person has done. And with no preconditions, because also very often I would also get tach v'tach u'pu'ulonem shachas asker alitzion, which would mean thank you very much, and where are you going till now? Where are you going to go from now, from here? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see more. Okay, which means, oh, I thought I was done, but I guess not. So that was like precondition, but just simple tach v'tach asker alitzion, a tremendous thing. So the Rebbe says that he's very happy to hear this news that people are sitting and learning Gemara specifically. It says, Ein ter, ein tevel, tera, tera, Hashem temima. That the Torah of Hashem is perfect. Fitting into the word, to the expression, Tamim tiyuim Hashem alakecha. That this idea of Tamim, that a person should be Tamim, that it says that Yaakov, for example, was an ish tam. That doesn't mean that Yaakov was a simpleton, but rather uncomplicated. Okay, the difference between simpleton, which would mean fool, and uncomplicated, which means his relationship to Hashem was on a very simple, no nonsense, uncomplicated level. Whatever it is Hashem wants, that's what I'm doing. That was Yaakov. Yaakov is analogous of Tiferes, the sphere of Tiferes, which is Rachmanis, which is, that's a Kiva wit, which is, he's not here, which is, you got all ways of doing it, which is the middle path. And so that when we talk about Torah, learning Torah, so Teres Hashem Tamima, Torah is also this middle path, because it says that Oraisa Kutcha Brichu V'Torah V'Yisrael Kul Echad. Okay, that the Torah and Hashem and the Jewish people are all one. And how is it that the Torah, that the Jewish people become one with Hashem, is specifically through the Torah. And he says now, specifically here, what is it that's making him so happy? You would think like, duh, people are learning. I mean, you're talking, this is a shtetl yidden, where, and you're talking about followers of the Alter Rebbe. So you're talking that people have some kind of something that they're sitting and learning. You know, so what's he saying? Zu hashlamas kol hashas kula b'rayv irayis u'minyanim anash. This is the shmudas, this news that I hear, that in most cities and minyanim of, you can't call them Lubavitchers, but I guess Talmidim of the Alter Rebbe, can't call them Lubavitchers because he didn't live in Lubavitch, he lived in Lyazhna or Liadi, that they're finishing the entire Shas. That we have something which is called Lubavitchers of a minyan, a minhag, of something called Chalukas HaShas, whereby everybody learns one Masechta or more in the course of a year. The Rebbe spoke about Daf Yomi, and the Rebbe said it's a good thing. Yes, it's a good thing. And the fact that Mayor Lublin was set it up was a very good thing. And the idea that people should be all learning all on the same page wherever they go and be able to hear a shir is a good thing. But for he heard from his father-in-law, meaning the Friedrich Rebbe, not every good thing do we have to do. So the Rebbe never encouraged, I can't say never, there were people that I know that the Rebbe said to learn Daf Yomi.
I have learned the blot in 770.
Okay,
there, and in
there's blots, there are yeshivas, and yes, there are. There are people learning Daf Yomi in Lubavitch too, yes. But the Rebbe never said, it's not a Lubavitch minhag to learn Daf Yomi. Our minhag is Chalukas HaShas. So that, and that includes, when you say Shas, Shas means not the 20 volumes that are sitting on my bottom shelf, but rather the 20 volumes plus the Seder of Zeroim and Kodshim and Tamid and Midais and Avos and Shkalim, that these are Mishnayis that don't have Gemara to them, that they also have to be learned as part of the Chalukah.
Shkalim
has your Shalmi, but it does not have Bavli.
In the
Talmud Bavli cycle, for some reason, I don't know why it was included as such, because it's in the it's in Masecht Pesachim. When they printed Shkalim, they printed it with the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi on other Mishnayos that don't have Talmud Bavli also, but Shkalim was, for some reason, I don't know why, the widow and brothers Ram, when they printed the Gemara, decided that they're going to put that one in there. Okay, it's just sort of like, maybe it was available. I don't know what the deal was. Okay, so since it was in there, so they included it in Daf Yomi as well. It's not in Daf Yomi?
It is in Daf
Yomi. It is in Daf Yomi.
Just finished Yuma. It.
Okay.
Before Yuma.
Right
before.
So the Maisa, the last cycle, okay, it was the last one where they had, there's two Tzuras Adaf of Shkalim. Last year was the last one of the Litvisha one. This year they added six blot to make it the Hasidic one.
Okay. Where did the other six blot come from?
It's a different Tzuras Adaf. It's the same. It did not come from the brothers Rum.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this year Daf Yomi is going to take 6 days longer.
It took 6 days longer this year.
So
okay.
And that's...
Could you fill that up for me?
Sure. I'm going to wait till 2020, because I missed it.
Anyway, so the...
It's the most...
The idea being that if a person takes a proper Masechta, so that means that they're learning a bit every year. This year I took Pesachim, for example. Okay? We tried, but it didn't work.
He's not on anymore?
No, he's not on there. He's on a phone. So what does it mean for me to learn Pesachim in the course of a year? I have to learn 9 blot in a month. Okay, so 9 blot in a month means I learn about a third of a page a day. The Gemara, Rashi, Tosis, and whatever else I happen to learn. If I was learning Daf Yomi, I would not have the time to study it in any types of depth. Not that I consider Gemara, Rashi, Tosis, and an occasional Rosh as learning in depth. That's still learning. That's called still learning Lagirsa. But I definitely remember yesterday what I learned the day before. So, as opposed to Daf Yomi, probably most people refer to Daf Yomi as like magic slate Gemara. If you remember those, where they you write on them and you pick up the paper and zip, and it's all gone. So the Rebbe liked this idea because when you have people participating in a group and they're all learning, they're all taking part of something. It's as though the entire group learned the entire thing. So it's not that I'm learning my part and you're learning your part. It's we're all learning the entire thing together.
So when you're similar to like when you...
So it's like I finish Shas every year.
Right, but it's when... Rachman Etzlan, when someone is Nifter...
And we break up
you break up the Mishnayos. Correct. Same idea. That's probably where it comes from.
Sharing a good burden, but
yeah. So the Rebbe continues, "Haydal aver b'kasha la'asid," and I'm thanking for that which has happened till now, and requesting that it should continue in the future. And for many a while, it was divided. The division date when we would say you have until to learn a Gemara was Yud Tes Kislev. For some time, during the Nisias of the Rebbe Rashab, it was changed to Chav Dalid Teves, which was the Yortzeit of the Alter Rebbe. Yutes Kislev is called Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus.
And my
that's coming up.
Thank you.
That's why they did.
No, Chav Dalid Teves was already. Oh, we're in Shvat. Right. Okay. So the it was changed for whatever reason, and then the Rebbe changed it back to Yud Tes Kislev. I don't know what it could be that they said they didn't have time on Yud Tes Kislev to divide up the Shas. I don't know what the difference between Yud Tes Kislev, what was going on over there. That doesn't say what was the problem and what takes such a difficult thing for people to say, okay, I'll take this one, you take that one. So, but it got pushed off the Chav Dalid Teves. For some reason, maybe people were busy and they couldn't finish the Masechtas by Yud Tes Kislev because of something was going on. Like it could have been like an epidemic of typhoid or something. Right. You know, who knows? It just doesn't say in any of the books. So, but that's the deal. So, and this has been an ongoing occurrence among Lubavitchers for over 200 years. So, in that vein, you might say I've learned Shas 200 times. And so it should give, and so Hashem should increase to strengthen their hearts with their strength each and every year with the strength of Torah. Okay, it's an interesting thing, this expression, Gvura Shel Torah. Okay. We just said that the Torah is rooted in Tiferes, which Tiferes is the middle column, Torah Hashem Tamima. Mm-hmm. Okay? The...
Emes.
Yeah, Emes. Okay? Gemilas Chasadim is kindness. Tzedakah is kindness. Davening is Gevura, because it says that the time of davening is a time of war. And learning Torah is Tiferes. So here he's talking about Gevurois. It says that the gvuras that we're talking about in Torah are actually a gvuras that are a higher level than the gvuras than the teferis that we're talking about when we say Torah Hashem Tamima. Torah Hashem Tamima refers to the level of the Torah that we can relate to, that we understand. When we're talking about the gvura of the Torah, that's talking about the source of the Torah in Atik, which is the inner level of Keser. The Torah, of course, comes from the highest expressions of Hashem. It's the second manifestation in the creation. First there was It's a debate. First it was Neshamas Yisrael, then it was the Torah. But then saying, no, it says in the Torah, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Deber Al Bnei Yisrael, tell the Bnei Yisrael, so the Torah came first. So it depends, the expression is, depends what you're talking about. So, but in its source, in the absolute essence of Hashem, the Torah was second. Okay? That the Jews would be an expression of kindness, the Nishmas Yisrael in their essence is an expression of Chesed, and the Torah is an expression of Gevurah, and the two together, because the whole reason why the creation is made is in order that the Jews learn Torah, and that then creates Tiferes, because Tiferes is an amalgam of Chesed and Gevurah, and that, those two together forge the level of revealed Tiferes, of revealed Emes, as we like to say. Lahedia livnei adam gvurasei shelter shebalpav v'koichai v'oiz. To make known to man it's the strength of the Torah, specifically the Torah shebalpav, its strength and its might. And he's been emphasizing here the idea of Torah shebalpav, specifically. If you want to know what is it that Hashem wants, you have to do Torah Shebal Peh. First, as a davar pashut, by looking at the 24 books of Tanakh, you're not going to have a clue what it is that Hashem wants. You get something like, you know, a pasuk called Taitafos Beinei Necha. That, not that the word Taitafos is a word that we know, because the word totafos is, if you translated the word totafos the way Rashi translates the word totafos, you'd get four. That's how Rashi translates it. Tait in African is two, and fot in Coptic is two. So 2 + 2 = 4. So you get totafos, Beinanechli, you have to have a four between your eyes. And we know that we don't go sticking fours between our eyes and say we're doing a mitzvah. So we only know what it is that we're supposed to be doing because of the Torah Shebal Peh.
Everybody, every Jew who puts on tefillin, no matter where they are,
yeah, exactly,
believes in the Torah Shebal Peh to some degree, because
yeah, unless you're a Karaite, yes.
No, but unless you're, I said every Jew.
Right. Okay.
But,
good.
Even the women of the wall,
okay,
they're
good.
Still so putting on black square tefillin
between their on the top of their foreheads. Yes. Okay. Now, what's the deal with pashut halacha? If you really, I tell people, I think I mentioned this not too long ago. You can, Akiva, if you remember this, if you or Michael, if you remember that, if you want to know what it is that Hashem wants, open up a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
Do you remember me saying such a thing, Akiva?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you remember the story that I told over there then about my time in Seattle?
I don't remember.
You remember?
Yes, I think so. Go ahead.
Okay.
I like stories, though. Can I tell it again?
Okay. So, my second year in Seattle, I was in Seattle for 2 years in yeshiva there. So I don't remember if it was the first year or the second year at this point. There was a couple that moved from Crown Heights, a Lubavitcher couple. They had a son, and I think she was pregnant, or very shortly, very shortly after she gave birth to their second child, which was a daughter. And he was from Hadara Teira, and she was from Machan Chana. And I used to go over to their house all the time for Shabbos, because the food in the yeshiva, like every food in every yeshiva, it was inedible. So I'd go over to their house, and I looked at it as being a miftza. You know, it was like a campaign, because like this, I would go over and I'd say, I would learn with the guy. He wasn't much of a learner guy, but he liked hearing Divrei Torah, and we would sit and we'd discuss, and his wife would get into it, you know, so, and she was a pretty good cook from what I remember. So this is one day I was in a store, and I happened to catch her the side of my eye. I saw her walk by, and it looked like she didn't have her hair covered. And I tried to do a double back and not look. I tried to look, but not look. Okay, and she caught me scanning, and she came up to me, and she said, "Come to our house for Shabbos." You know, I'm still trying to figure out, is that her, she does she have a really good shekel, or is her hair not covered? Okay, but when she came up to me, so she said, come to our house for Shabbos. And I asked her, can I still? And she said, sure, no problem. That's not a problem. Okay, so I went to their house, and it was very traumatic. Oh, that Shabbos, he came to shul, instead of in a kapata, he came to shul in a white suit. He looked stupid. He looked really dumb. Okay, I don't know anybody who wears a white suit.
Much fair.
Yeah, okay. this wasn't like the begotten that the Yemenites wear. This was a white tailored suit. Okay? And he had like basically like he shaved off the cheeks of his beard and shaved his beard down to his face so that he had like the how would you describe it? Just like the sideburns coming down to the chin. Okay, with not even a goatee. Okay? So so I sat and we talked, and that they were planning on going to Israel, and they were going out of the, they were finding it too constrictive, this Lubavitch stuff, and they were finding themselves in their Judaism, and that was that. Okay? They left town and he moved to Gush Katif someplace, and
it's much fair.
And he's he has, like, he was wearing a kippah seruga, and he was, like, enjoying the miluim and, you know, the whole business. Okay? So this bothered me. Why did it bother me? Is because I have been, at that point, from for 6 years. And they had been from for 8 years. So I went to the mashpia and the yeshiva there, and I said, listen, it bothers me. He says, what bothers you? And I said, they're from 2 years longer than I am. And they gave it up. Who's got to say that in 2 years, I won't do the same thing?
Give up.
So, so he said, just first of all, the fact that it bothers you is enough. And he told the story of a man who came to the Tzemach Tzedek and said, Rebbe, he's bothered with Sveikis and Amuna. And the Tzemach Tzedek says, so was art, dear? Why does it bother you? So big deal. So you don't believe in God sometimes. So what? So he said, but Rebbe, I'm a Yid. So Tzemach Tzedek said, Oy Bezo, you have nothing to worry about. He says, just the fact that you're worried about it, that's enough. And then he said, he said, what do you think they moved to Seattle for? Of all the places, they have to move 3,200 miles away from Crown Heights. What do you think? They came here for the Judaism? That's not why they came. Okay, there were 7 Lubavitchers living in Seattle at the time. You know, so they came here with this plan. And he said, and if you want it, he says, there's no guarantees, but you should learn, he says what he told me, you should learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch every day after Shachris.
Yeah.
I said, what are you talking about, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? And, you know, I should learn Lakuti Torah, I should learn Samach Vav. And he said, no. With Samach Vav, you'll become an academician. You'll become a college professor. But you won't necessarily be from. With Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, especially right after Shachris, because Shachris is didn't end the whole thing with the ladder, with the Soilam Mites of Arts of Arosha Magia Shemaima, that you're trying to climb a ladder over here, and you're trying to get up and, you know, be Pimisiachu de Lakus, and the feelings of Bittl, and all this other stuff going on over here. And you come down the ladder, he says, the first thing you should do, hit the Shulchan Aruch, because there it talks, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, because there it talks about mundane things. If you're worried about if I should tie my left shoe before my right shoe, so then the big things are going to take care of themselves.
Talks about living a life, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yep, and indeed, that was my Seder until the Rebbe instituted learning Rambam, and Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was replaced by Rambam. Okay, so, which is also Pashut Halacha. Yeah, still Halacha. I don't know if I have to tie my shoe or not, because I don't know if the Rambam says anything about tying shoes per se, but it's worked so far. That was 1981, so, and I'm still in the program, and so I guess it worked till now. But like the rabbi said, there's no guarantees. So, I could still move the Gush Katif someplace.
No, you can't.
No?
No, they gave it away.
Oh. Thank you.
Yeah, I like it. I love it. Yeah.
Here's part they didn't give away it. Anyway.
Gush Etzion.
Gush Etzion, yeah. Anyway. Okay. The Torah Shel Peh gives us oiz, and he's going to now focus on the word oiz. Pir Shleima HaMelech Alav HaShalom Chagra Ba'oiz Masneha. We say it every Friday night before Kiddush. She girds her loins with strength. Okay. This oiz, this idea of oiz, strength or courage, however else you would translate the word oiz, it says a heavy oz kenemer. It says in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. It says giber ke'ari, be strong like a lion, but oz kenemer, be courageous like a leopard. What's the difference between a lion and a leopard? Is that a leopard is not very strong.
No.
But a leopard.
Climb a tree.
Yeah, lepers, the way they generally go after their prey is they climb trees, mm-hmm. and they wait for the prey to come underneath, and then they fall on them. They don't go head to head like a lion.
No.
What?
They're crafty.
Yes.
Well, leopard plans, they pick on someone their own size.
Right.
Very well planned.
Correct. You're not going to have a leopard take down a rhinoceros so fast.
No.
Okay. Whereas a pride of lions would. So. Well,
guy makes his living teaching businessmen how to be like a leopard. Because you go after your competition your own size. Go after the ones you can beat. The whole thing.
Right. No.
You bite off more than you can chew.
Yeah. But here it is. Is he's going after. He's going after. Listen. He's going to go after one of these wildebeests or one of these big bucks over there with the big horns. So the leopard could get killed too. I mean, you know, so, but he still goes, listen, he's thinking lunch, you know, so I know how I am when I have to go after my lunch. So, anyway, so this expression of O's is generally, O's is related to Nesach and Hod, which is what it relates to over here. The Masnayim, the loins. If you're drawing a sphere chart, there's two ways to do it. There's two ways that it appears. The spheres are called, they draw like, it's called the Eitz Chaim, which is the triple segels. And then there's the way that the spheres are drawn, that if you connect the dots, it looks like Galileo's man over there. What do they call that? You know, so the Netzach and Hod become the two thighs. Okay? Now, Masneim heim davar hamamid kola guf imroi shanatsa va'aymed aleihem. Your thighs are very important because your strength is all in your thighs and your height is all in your thighs. Yaakov, what size hat do you wear?
Big.
7 5/8?
Yes.
Okay. You wear a 7 5/8. I wear a 7 1/2. Okay? Does that have any indication? How tall are you?
Short.
Short. And I'm not short. Okay, so your head is bigger than my head. Okay, so what makes it that I'm taller than you? It's not your head, it's your legs. The legs is what establishes the koim of the tzir. This is what determines the stature of the person. And a person's strength is all in their loins. I used to learn with a guy who was not a boxer, but he was a boxing historian. Talk about things. He wrote books about boxing and boxers. Yeah, talking about niche writing. Some of them were pretty interesting books. So,
I read about boxers.
He knew everything about boxing going back for like 100 years. So it was just a really cute story about him. When I was learning with him, and he'd tell me, you hear about this new Jewish guy coming up? This is like 15 years ago. The guy's name is Salita. They call him the Star of David. Okay? I said, I don't know. Jewish boxer, someone, you know. This time it's just at an internet. I was like, this is okay. There's this guy. So he's an amateur. He never got beaten as an amateur, and then he turned pro. And
he got beat.
Eventually, he did get beat a couple of times. But anyway, so right, so he married a girl from. This is Salida married a girl from Detroit. Happens to be a person with whom I learned, his daughter, Aronoff. And this boxing historian came down with leukemia. And he was spent his last months in hospital. So I asked this Salida if he wouldn't mind, if he has time, he could make another Jew very happy. He could go to visit this man in hospital. Okay? So I walked in. Now, Salida could take me down no problem. I mean, he's a professional boxer, and I am not. But when it comes down to it, he's 5'7 and weighs 135 pounds. Okay? So I walk into this guy's room, and he says to me, "Rabbi Finman, I'm so glad that you came. I'm not really up to a visit, but you can stay a couple minutes." And I said, "Well, I really didn't come for me to see you. I came for the guy behind me to see me, who is like totally and completely blocked by me." So he said, "Who?" So I moved away, and this guy was like standing there. This guy almost jumped out of bed. "Dimitri Salida is in my hospital room." He called up his wife immediately. "Dimitri Salida came to visit me." Ooh, had a whole talk. He sat and he talked. He told me he was very weak and he wanted to go to sleep. We sat and we talked for an hour with this guy. He was like totally, completely animated. And I even said, at one point I said, Salida was kind of like doubting who this guy was. And I said to him, "Listen, Dimitri, you want to know who this guy is?" I said, his name is Alan. "Tell Dimitri which fight was the most difficult fight he had." So he fought for a second, and he said some guy's name. I'm following this fight. He said, "That was the most difficult fight that this guy had." And he said, "Yeah, he's right." So he knew it. Now, so I'm bringing him up is because since he was into coaching and the history of boxing, he says a boxer doesn't throw a punch with his arm.
He has to leave.
Boxer throws a punch with his hips.
He has to get his back leg into it.
He has to put your whole bottom part of your body into it. If you hit somebody with just your arm, it's a tap. It's a love tap. And you're not going to get anywhere with it. It says you have to put your whole body into it. You have to put your hip into it. That's where your strength is. Your strength is in your netzach and your hoid, not in your chesed and gevura. That's the whole reason why I told that whole story, by the way. Okay?
Wow.
Okay? So, this idea, the Torah Shebal Peh, is our loins. How are you going to wake up in the morning and get to the end of the day? When you get to the bottom of it, okay, tzedakah is very good. Okay? But tzedakah, you do it once in the morning, maybe once in the afternoon. A guy comes and knocks on your window, you feel rachmanis, you throw a quarter at him. That's not going to get you through the day. Davening, okay, davening you have a better chance.
Neither will that quarter.
Huh?
Neither will the quarter.
Right. Davening, you have a better chance. Okay? Because davening, you spend the first part of the morning. And like it says in chapter 12 in Tanya, that if you get stuck in the middle of the day and you find that you're getting overwhelmed with all the pressures of the world, you should just kind of stop 10 seconds and just think about what you were thinking about by davening. And then you have mincha in the middle of the day. And then you have Meiriv to get you through. Okay, good. That might be able to do it. But you have to be constantly reconnecting at that point. When you're talking Torah Shebal Peh, at what point, and when a person's acting in the course of their day, are they not acting in accordance with Torah Shebal Peh?
Sleeping.
Never.
You are sleeping. Always. I hope you're sleeping like a Jew.
Yeah, I don't know how to.
Yeah, even sleeping. You go to sleep on your left side. In the middle of the night, you roll over. You turn on your right side. You know, this type of thing. Yeah. You don't sleep on your back. You don't sleep on your stomach.
Yeah.
You know, even when you sleep.
I'm too tired. It's good in my life. I never thought about it.
Okay, so that there's that the every single day, every single moment that we have from the time we wake up till the time we get to the end of the day, the only way that we're getting to the end of the day is through the strength of Torah Shebaal Peh.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
V'heim hamelchim evian oisel machsav chavtzai. It says your thighs, your legs, your loins. This is where you. This is what takes you to where you have to go.
Yeah.
What time is it? It's just not 7 o'clock. How long are we talking? I'm talking 45 minutes. Okay. I actually had prepared the whole chapter because I thought, this is an easy chapter. We're not going to have 1, 2, 3. This is where we're going to stop. We got up to.
We're almost in the first, done with the first paragraph.
Yeah, just like it is with the.
We're on the leg of the first paragraph.
Yes. Just like it is in the. Ukamashihu begashmi is the guvkahu beruchnigas anav for sholokis. Because where we're up to is the first one in the line is Begashmi is a guv. Kamoshahu, it's the dot that ends. Oichas, oise limchois chafsei, to be continued.